School of the Master, Lecture 8. Is truth real or is truth illusion? What is it that makes up truth in our life? In the School of the Master, truth is that which is never changing. Truth is that which is always the same. Truth is that which is real, and truth is that which is an illusion. Now, all things are an illusion, whether they are real or not. All things are an illusion. We can have an illusion of negative, we can have an illusion of positive, and all are just fine. All are very acceptable. Now, what do we want to have? Do we want to think of truth as being real or truth as being illusion? First, let's talk about what truth is. What is truth? Truth is that which is and always will be and never changes. Now, is there anything that you know of in your world? Is there anything you know of in life that is always the same, never changing? And the answer is no. We have not the ability to enter into the absolute consciousness. We have not the ability to enter into the allness, the isness, and that sort of stuff, even though it's kind of fun to talk about it, kind of fun to think about it. In the allness and in the isness, all that is unchangeable. It is always the same, today, tomorrow, yesterday. And there is no today, tomorrow, or yesterday in the allness, but it is always the same. Now, here in our relative world, in our human world, and we are living in a human world, we call things truth, and we call things illusion, and we call things real, and we call things not real. Now, for us, that's an apparent truth. That's an apparent correct thing. But in reality, it's not correct. In reality, if you're going to use the word truth, meaning that which remains the same forever and ever, then you cannot use that same word to define an incident that takes place on the human level. Now, what we call truth on the human level is that which seems to be correct, that which seems to be practical, that which seems to be something that we can depend on. Now, even that, I say, Ellen, go down and get me a loaf of bread. And so she takes the car and goes down and gets me a loaf of bread. And she's driving along, and she's going through a certain area, and she's going 50 miles an hour, which is what the freeway allows, the highway allows. And she gets stopped. And the officer says, why are you traveling 50 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone? Ellen says, I've lived here for 50 years, and this has always been a 50-mile-an-hour zone. Well, yesterday we changed it. Oh, my goodness sakes. Okay, where's the sign? Right there. I did not see it. Because I've traveled this so often, everything has become so common to me, I did not see that it was changed. I thought the truth was it was 50 miles an hour. And the officer says, well, changing world, upgrading world. Now, you say, well, why is it that it has changed to 25 miles an hour here? Well, because the school, which has been under construction for the last 2 years now, has finally been completed, and students have come into the school, and so that's the school zone of 25 miles an hour. Oh, my goodness sakes, I would never violate a law, much less a school zone law, for we need to protect our children. And the officer said, well, yes, that's the right attitude you have. And I'll just tell you right now, be careful and be aware of the changing zones, because we have several other zones that are going to be changing soon around here too. Oh, really? Where is that? Well, when you drive through Campo has been considered to be just a little sleepy town, and you could drive through Campo at 35, 40 miles an hour, and you wouldn't see a bug. But now they're building houses all over Campbell, and so they're building a speed limit because they're putting stores in there and they're doing other things. And so it too will have a slower speed limit. But, oh my, how can you believe anything anymore? It's always changing. I thought that was the truth of the highway. The highway goes through here, and the highway is 50 miles an hour, or 65 miles an hour, actually. But if you drive under that, you're usually okay. But how can they change it? How can they change it? Well, because it is not the truth. It is merely the current fact. The current fact. Now, if the school were to burn down and not be there, then the speed limit would change. Because the speed limit says when children are present. Because you don't have to slow down driving past the school zone at night unless there's a school function and there are children present for the evening school function. So there are so many relative aspects to truth, so many relative aspects to driving zones, so many relative aspects to things we were thinking about, that we have to really keep on our toes. We have to really keep aware of what's going on. Is it real? Is this the truth real, or is this the truth, the illusion? Well, the word truth doesn't mean eternally so. It just means presently so. It is presently so, Ellen, that you are standing in front of the grocery store. And 10 minutes from now, it'll be presently so that you'll be standing in front of the post office. Because you're going to go to the post office. And then a few minutes later, presently so, you'll be at the hardware store. And then presently so, you'll be at the health center. And presently so, you'll be over at the grocery store again. And presently so, then you'll be back in campus. And somebody says, well, where is Ellen? Well, which moment are you talking about? Which presently so moment are you talking about? We want to always put the word truth so indelibly and so positively on everything. We want to say, is that the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? There is no truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, because it changes moment to moment. Now, 1 minute you think the truth is this, and the next minute you think the truth is that. What are you going to do? Well, as far as being a human being goes, you're going to do the most logical, reasonable things. Because humans are logical and reasonable. The divine is not logical or reasonable or human, but the thing is, a human is. Now, how are you going to be reasonable and logical as a human being when it comes to the diversity of possibilities that the world has to offer to you? How are you going to be reasonable and logical? Well, as Sheriff Carter would say, you use common sense. You use common sense. What does common sense tell you that should happen here? Not what does some scientific principle that is in the process of being proven showing that something different takes place. Not that, but what does logic and common sense have to tell you? Well, the School of the Master doesn't teach logic and common sense, but it does teach that we are aware of all the possibilities that are there. The word truth and the word immortal and the word eternal and the word world everlasting, all these words are irrational, irreverent words, because they don't mean anything. Because they only mean something when you have a human world. In an inhuman, in an immortal world, they don't mean anything. Because there is no immortality in the divine world. There is no attitude of these natures there. There's no truth. There's no truth in the divine world, because all things are. Here in the relative world, there is truth, there is relativity, there is the feeling of things that have veracity to them, truth, that they have commonality to them, that you can depend on them. Ellen drives through Campbell, and she's driving along at 25 miles an hour, and everybody's honking their horn behind her and saying, why are you driving so slow? Why are you driving so slow? And she says, well, the rule is that the Campo is a little community. Well, they just rescinded that. When did they do that? Well, in the council meeting last night. Well, okay, I'll pull over and you can drive fast, but I'm going to drive 25 miles an hour because I have not received any official notice that there has been a change. And so I'm going to cooperate with my common sense, and my common sense, I must drive according to what I know to be the principle, what I know to be the rule. Now, you are driving by what you know, and you have confidence that what you know of the meeting last night actually took place. And I believe you. I believe you that you believe in yourself. But until I know this as a certainty for me, I am not going to go contrary to what I have practiced and believed in all of this time that the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit is there. Mm-hmm. You see, we live in this world where truth is so relative. Truth is so changing. Truth is so almost immaterial. And it's immaterial because it is not something that can be depended on. It is not something that has a veracity to it, a strength to it, a power to it. And we have to always be very careful about that. If we're not careful about the words like truth and words like illusion is a perfectly acceptable word. All the world is an illusion. Now, Ellen, I want you to think this thought. I now am independently wealthy. Can you think that thought?
Yes.
Now, when you think that thought, is it going to go contrary to what you know to be the truth about yourself right now?
No.
Why not? Where is this money that you have right now which says that you are independently wealthy? Where is it? And you say, it's in my consciousness. Now, if it's in your consciousness and you ever say it's not in your consciousness, you know, that it's not really yours in your life to touch and handle and use, then you are being that illusion. The illusion that you got it, the illusion you haven't got it. A little child says, 8, 10, 12, 14 years old, he says, my dad's the greatest. And then the person talking to the boy says, I'm sorry to tell you this, but your father just died. No, my dad's the greatest. My dad's not dead. My dad can't die. My dad's not dead. He's not dead. In that kid's mind, in that kid's heart, his father is just as alive as when he was alive. And the fact that he was dead, and the fact that this person knew that he was dead, didn't make him dead for the child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we have to kill off our people? Do we have to have death take the toll? Do we have to give up on life just because that's the practice and the things that has been done? Do we have to do that? And the answer is no. But do we do it? Yes, because we don't realize that we are the master of all illusion. Not truth. Not truth. Truth is such a temporary, fleeting thing. But illusion is whatever we wish it to be. Now you say, well, that's just as fleeting and just as temporary as truth then. No. Illusion is whatever we wish it to be at whatever moment we wish it to be. Now, truth, how do we define it? Truth is, well, I think the best word that would support truth is a fact. Truth is something that can be proven. Truth is something that can be shown, something that can be demonstrated, something that can be realized, and maybe not. There are many definitions you can have for that word, but now, what is the illusion? Can you say, I have the right to have any illusion I want in my consciousness? And I have the illusion in my consciousness that I'm wealthy. I have the illusion in my consciousness that I'm healthy. I have the illusion in my consciousness that I'm all things. If you can believe that, and if you can understand that, then you empower that, and then you experience it. But it can only be a truth for you until you can make it 100% illusion. 100% illusion is what you visualize it to be, and you don't change your mind. Now, truth is a fact, and the facts change. And so when the facts change, then it should change the appearance. But it doesn't always change the appearance. You may be independently wealthy, and then you lose everything. But you don't really lose everything, because you have the attitude of being independently wealthy. And so you say, c'est la vie. And then you go right back to living just like you were living when you were independently wealthy, and the money is right there for you to enjoy. The abundance is right there. You have not given up your idea of independently wealthy. You may have given up your fact, your truth of the independent wealth, but the idea is still yours, and so therefore you experience it. It reminds me of the Getty family. They had a grandson, and the grandson said he wanted to take a trip around the world, and he wanted to do it incognito. He wanted to do it without his wealth, without the family wealth that he was so used to. But what did he do? He took the credit cards along. And with the credit cards, he had to prove, with his driver's license or whatever, that he was indeed a Getty, that he was a member of the J. Paul Getty family, this infinitely wealthy family. And he tried to pretend that he was not something that he was, and he could not be something that he was, because he was that which he was. And you are independently wealthy. You know, you are fantastic. You are glorious. You are that illusion. Now, did the young Getty boy want to pretend that he was just a normal person? Pretend that he had just enough money to get by on what he was doing? Whereas, if he would sign his name, he would have $1 million, $1 billion, $1 billion, you know. Because that's the way things are today. Today, you have $1 million and you're not too thought too highly of, but you thought, you know, that's just a little drop in the bucket. And in truth, that's what it is. What is it that you are? What is it that we are? What is it that, how do we make illusion to be more significant for us in our lives? Well, people have the tendency, and they love to use it, to say, it's just an illusion. It's just a fantasy. It's just something that is not real. And it's not real. Well, if people live in your life based upon the fact that they think it's real, then for them it is real. For them it is something that is not passing, but very real. And do you want to live that way? Do you want to live with your illusion of who you are? What is your illusion of who you are? Do you have an imagination in your mind, an illusion of who you are that says, I am independently wealthy. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I am surrounded by wonderful friends. I am CEO of the University of Healing and the Church of God Unlimited, and it is a beautiful, wonderful, prosperous organization serving around the world, doing beautiful things for everybody, unlimited finances to work scholarships out for people and do those things. When you have that attitude about your mind, do you have that experience? Yeah. Now, you did not have any more money a year ago when you were abundantly giving out
scholarships,
thank you. When you were abundantly giving out scholarships, you didn't have any more money, and yet you gave them out. Now you feel that our budget is changing, and so therefore we should be giving out less scholarships. And why should you? Why should you? Nothing has really changed except the attitude. Now, can we keep that attitude that we are really independently wealthy? that we really have an abundance of money in our scholarship program, that we really have an abundance of wealth to be used for any purpose we want. Can we do that? Yes, we can. Now, why don't we do that? Because we're looking at appearances. And we have made an illusion of something that we think is not so good. And in making this illusion, we've empowered that to be something that's controlling our experience. And we don't want to do that. Now, what is truth? What is illusion? What is reality? One person went to the bank because the bank reported they had a large amount of money on their account. And when they got to the bank says, yes, you do. You got a large amount of money on your account. And they said, hallelujah. And so then they went out and they started spending the money. And then, shortly, the bank came back to them and said, you don't have that money. It was on the wrong name of yourself. You know, the right name, but the wrong person. So you don't have that money. Now, does that person have to give back that money that the bank told them they had? No, not at all. Uh-huh. It is the bank's responsibility, and it's the bank's charge. The bank is going to try to get it from you, just on principle's sake, but they really can't force it because they told you you had it. And if you can't believe your bookkeeping and your banker that you have what you have, then what can you believe? Now, it's true they did not expect that money. They did not know where that money came from. But being a church organization as we are, we get money from people from all sources. We get money from wealthy people, from poor people. We get checks from people all around the world. And we get denominations from all different nationalities and all different nations. And so it's quite interesting. It's like a holiday in going visiting as you go to the bank and visit where all the money has arrived from for our accounts. And it's a wonderful thing. But that's the illusion. That's the reality. You go down there and you say, well, what do we do? Well, there's still so much here and so much here and so much from this organization, so much from that, so much from your friends that you've helped over the years. And guess what? You gave a scholarship to this person. They're now paying back the scholarship. Oh, that's nice. And they are putting you on 1/3 of the income from their new company that they started, which is very wealthy. So you have 1/3 of the total assets of that company because you had given them the scholarship, you had trusted them, you had believed in them when the money was important to you. Now, is that an illusion? Sure, it's an illusion. Is that a true illusion? Yes. But if you ever are incredulous as you're thinking about this illusion, you take away its possibility for being expressed. Mm-hmm. You take away, you're like going to the bank and having the banker say, no, you don't really have that money. And it could be yes or no just as easily as one or the other. Why is it that we don't give ourselves credit on the yes side more often than we do on the no side? And we don't do that because habit. Habit. Now, I tell people, if you want to have an enjoyable, fantastic life, start saying to yourself, I like me, 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 I like me. And they say, oh, come on now, that's an old hat, and that's a pain in the neck. Well, have you tried it? Well, sure, I tried it, but nothing happened. But have you tried it? Yes, I tried it, but nothing happened. And, of course, nothing happened because every time they try it, nothing happens. And do you expect that a baby is going to be a man in an instant? It can be that way. But are you going to say it's going to take a few years for it to mature? Well, now, what about the idea of you saying, I like me? It doesn't have to take a few years. It can be instantaneous. But you say, I like me, and you build up within yourself an awareness, a consciousness, a belief that you are fantastic, that you are glorious, that you are wonderful, that you are independently wealthy, that you are whole and perfect, that you are everything that's good and beautiful. You build that up within yourself. And as you build that up within yourself, what happens? You experience it. And when you experience it, then what happens? When you experience it, then you compound it by having it happen in many other wonderful areas. It doesn't happen just in one area. It happens in many areas. Now, how do you have it take place in many areas? Well, you have it take place in many areas by just saying, I like me. When you make yourself the receptive instrument for your good is yours. It's not a matter that your good's not yours right now, because your good is as much yours right now as it ever will be. But you don't know it. We don't know it. We don't believe that our good is here. We don't believe that we have the cornucopia of all abundance right in our hands. And we're holding it and we say, what's this thing? Looks like a basket of fruit. Well, check it over. Check it over. And you find that it is the cornucopia of all good. It is the cornucopia of independent wealth. It is that truly right now. You read the Business Week magazine and you read about young men who are brought up in their family companies and so forth. Then all of a sudden the father decides, hey, I've had enough of this. I've got plenty of money. I'm going to retire and let my son take over. And so everybody says, does your son know enough about taking over? If he doesn't, he'll make a few mistakes, but he'll be fine. He'll be fine. Well, why are you quitting? I want to go and relax and enjoy life and get out there and ski and or travel the world and do all the things I want to do. I want to have that burden off my back. Well, do you think that you're an honorable father? Well, what do you mean? Why do you want to take the burden off your back and put it on your son's back? Well, to tell you the truth, these are the facts of life. I grew up with the burden of responsibility on me. And it's been a hang-up for me all of my life. But I worked well with it, and I had my family to feed, I had my company to build, I had the estate to compile. Now my son comes along, who is a happy-go-lucky fellow, who does the business just as a business, who has gone to colleges and educated himself in the areas that are important, and his responsibility, as I've taught him in recent months, is just to say yes to the corporation. To say, go ahead, try it. Go ahead, do it. Go ahead, let's give her a whirl. I think we can do it. Anything he thinks that he would say to his child or to anyone else, go ahead and do it, he says to his company people. And what happens? They're a success. Because they are unhindered by the possibility that they can't do it or that only the papa knows how to do it. Mm. And so the son is going to do the work and the papa is going to step out. Step away from it. It's a family concern. He's going to step away from it totally. Now, do you think he's going to be uninterested? He may be interested only to the degree that his son asks him. And his son knows, go, son, you can't do any wrong. Go. If you blow the whole thing, so you start again. You know, big deal. But you have a certain foreign country residue that you put aside just in case something goes wrong. You got a backup. But you don't even need the backup. When you are totally into the illusion of a successful operation, why would the son be able to do that? Why? And one father just gave his 35-year-old son the total business, and it was worth billions of dollars. Well, take a look at the young businesses that have been developing recently, that the boys have been 18 and 20, 23, 28 years old, developing multi-billion dollar businesses and running them successfully. And these young men are not running the company successfully anymore because they're listening to their advisors. If they would just do what they felt in their heart they wanted to do, which is how they started the business, which is how they made the business a success, they would be a success. But they're not doing that because their advisors are coming to them and saying, now we know better. We know better how to run big businesses. The phrase goes through the Business Week organization and says, can a bank ever get too big so that it cannot be dismantled? Can a bank ever become too prominent, too much in control, that it cannot be managed by the people? And that's a question they're answering now. Because around the world, many banks have become so important that they're telling the politics how to be run, telling the governments how to be run. And in that, what is that saying? The governments are operating on a financial basis, not on a basis of the desire, the will, the good of the people. And that'll change. That'll come back. I see it done. I see it done. My illusion is my illusion, but it's a real illusion. It's a real illusion because there now is peace on earth, and it began with my thought. There now is balance in the economics of the world, and it began with my thought. There now is peace everywhere, and everywhere is delightfully enjoying everything that's going on in the world. And it is in my thought. It is in what my thinking is, what my belief is, what my desire is, what my choice is, what my illusion is. Now, what's your illusion? What's your illusion for yourself? What's your illusion for the desires of your heart? Can you, as the CEO here of the University of Healing and Church of God Unlimited, can you see it as an absolutely successful organization? And can you see it successful right now?
Yes.
And not have any thought in your mind of bills to pay, of things to do, of debts to be paid? We have no debts. We have no bills. Everything is fairly current, and when it's not current, then we don't make any more. And because we only make bills for what money we have to pay. Because if we don't do that, then we're in trouble. So now, do we have this infinite abundance? Do we have the illusion that we have the infinite abundance here? Is this a prosperous-looking organization? Is this a prosperous-looking series of houses that we have? Are we so rich that we can keep vacant houses, beautiful vacant houses around us that are doing nothing, just being there? Can we do that? And we're doing it. How can we afford to do that? Because we're independently wealthy. Are we really independently wealthy? Yes. Do we own everything free and clear? Yes, we do. Are we keeping it that way? Yes, we are. Now, are we throwing our money away, just being wasteful with it? We're very, very frugal with it. We are doing the proper thing. We're doing like J. Paul Getty Sr. did, not Jr. We know we have it, and we don't need to spend it. We spend for whatever we choose, and then that's all. But we are living in the philosophy and in the talent of all abundance now is for the university. All about it. Now, this is what it's all about. This is what the School of the Master teaches. It teaches that all abundance exists right now. All abundance exists right here. All management is superb. We started up this company, and we had the wisdom to start it up and to maintain it and to keep it going where many other companies have failed. Many other companies have gone out of business because of many reasons. And ours continues to be in business. And maybe not the greatest university on the land, but many universities were small before they got large. Many universities had many years of preparing themselves to be outstanding, be fantastic. And they're doing it. They're doing it. And most universities, majority of the universities, established with a spiritual foundation, with a religious foundation, some church. You go to all these universities, business universities except. They usually are starting out because they're meeting a business need. But all other Oxford Yale, Harvard.
Cambridge,
yes. Well, you start naming all of these different universities, and they're all religiously backed, all religiously started. And they were started because somebody had a belief that education was valuable and that this knowledge was useful. We have that same belief. We're sharing that all the knowledge of your spiritual self, knowing who you are, knowing the truth about yourself, knowing how to live a life of a practical illusion, really brings you tremendous results. Do you think knowing the life of practical illusion is something that people can learn? Do you think that being a divine being is something people can learn? Do you think our vow of self-dedication is reliable? Is it possible that it can really be done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that something that really puts into people's consciousness who they are? Now, how many times every day do you read and say the vow of self-dedication? How many times every day do you say, I like me? How many times every day do you say, this is the absolute monastery, this is a school? And how many times every day do we say that this school is very successful and harmonious, and the uni campus dwells in peace, harmony, and love? That everybody is doing beautiful, lovely, fantastic thing. We have these affirmations of truth. We have these affirmations of awareness. We have these affirmations that speak to who we really are. Now, how many times a day do we say it? Well, you have it in front of your toilet. You have it in front of your sink. You have it in front of various areas. But one author who was a monk, and he went to this wonderful monastery, and in this monastery, he saw all these beautiful statements on the wall, beautiful carved statements out of wood that were just on the walls everywhere. And as he looked around, he says, wow, that is great, that is great. And he was there for about 2 months, and then someone said to him, a new visitor, oh, I like those statements on the wall. And he says, yes, they are good. And the visitor said, I like the one about we are divine. Oh, where is that? He didn't even know, because he'd become so accustomed to it, so habituated to it without being aware of it, without saying it, without living it, that it stood there staring him in the face, and he didn't take it into his heart and soul. We have oftentimes done things like that. We have these things staring into our heart and soul, and we don't take them in. We don't take them in because, but you don't know the trouble I've seen. That's a song that we like to sing. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Glory, hallelujah. And why do we sing a song like that? Because we don't believe in the philosophy we're living, we want to live. We're living that philosophy that we don't believe. We don't believe the teachings that we have said are so important. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is. What are we thinking in our hearts? That's what it is, pure and simple. The illusion of our heart, the illusion of our mind, the illusion of what we feel are our valuable expressions, what we feel is going to be the most beautiful, most fulfilling, most outstanding thing in the whole world. Now, what do you think is going to be that? This is the University of Healing. It's fantastic. It's glorious. I said it was started in incorporated in 1975 here in California, but I started it in 1948. Ever since 1948, I've been working on it and working on it and working on it. It was in my heart and in my mind and in my words to different people, University of Healing, University of Healing, University of Healing. And some people paid attention, and I tried to establish it in many different places. And each place that I established it, they wanted their their journey done first, their church developed first, and their organization done first. And finally, it only took so many years from 1948 to 1975 for me to say, I am done doing other people's dreams. I'm going to do my own dream. This dream is in me, and it's been in me for many years, just waiting to be developed, to be done, to be fulfilled. And so I took the illusion, and it was an illusion. And I put wheels under the illusion. I put ideas under it. And as I went around telling people about it, their enthusiasm was boundless, just like mine was. Their expectation of it was boundless, just like mine was. Their dream of the realization that it is so. It is so. It is happening. It is coming into itself. Now, for many years, it was blossoming very well. And then along came a few people who felt that it was not beneficial, and they wanted to tear it down. And in the tearing of it down, they thought, well, we'll tear down the founder. We'll tear down the founder and make him into a useless nothing. Well, that didn't work because my dream, my illusion, was bigger than any outer person, any outer thing, any outer expression that was ever given. And so it's sort of floating gently now, but now that the Olympics have begun, it will start strolling, start crawling, start moving, start going, and the people, new people are coming into our web realm, and they're finding the teachings symbolic and enthusiastic and joyful, and they're taking up the gauntlet, and they want to move the university. They want it to grow. They want it to, but we have to watch out that they don't want it to grow into their tool, their toy, their gift. It has to be in the university's gift. And though I happen to write the books, though I happen to put down the philosophy of the university, and though we all think that that philosophy is pretty good. Ernest Holmes said, the teaching is open at the top. Well, I don't say the teaching is open at the top. I say the teaching is open within you. You take the teaching and apply it to your life. You take the teaching and apply it to your dreams. You take the teaching and apply it to your ideals. But the teaching says, be yourself and have fun. The teaching doesn't say, worship me, University of Healing. It says, be yourself and have fun. You see, we have to be very careful that we don't build a pedestal and put the university on it where it can be knocked off. We have to build a philosophy, which we have done, and that philosophy is an illusion, and it's an illusion that all is good and very good. All is beautiful and very beautiful. All is divine and very divine. All is done now. We live it, and we call our work a university or a school, and we're approved by the state and federal organizations throughout the United States. And we're approved only because we are consistent. We are consistent with what we teach. We're not going around trying to teach somebody else's philosophy. We're not trying to be a Christian organization. We are a universal organization. The divine is within each being. And the divine is the Christ consciousness, if you like. The divine is the Buddha consciousness. The divine is the spiritual consciousness within each one of us, within all of us and all that we are. And this is what our dream is. This is what our goal is. Our goal is not that we perpetuate ourselves, but we perpetuate the dream. We perpetuate the concept. We perpetuate the ideal, and the ideal will run with itself and carry itself and will stand forth a proven tool, and nothing can destroy it. For it is an illusion that has its own life. now. And I love it. I love it.
I love it too.
I love it.